The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. We're on Man in Line today through till 1, open line on 66 13 68. You can WhatsApp or message 166 177 or email studio at manxradio.com. Well, a rest day for TT fans and volunteers and participants. So if you're listening for the first time this week, here we are. As mentioned yesterday about Peel Day, what happened on Peel Day this year, the Clerk of Peel Commissioners has confirmed there will be a review of Peel Day this year. Follows a number of complaints on social media which claim Peel was empty and didn't bring people to the traders on Michael Street. Derek Sewell says Peel relies on the event to attract visitors to spend in the shops and hospitality businesses, but it's difficult when races are on. If you've got any thoughts on that, then by all means do get in touch, particularly if you are in Peel. Of course, there's some debate about the number of race days that we have. The government department in charge, Enterprise Motorsport Division, seems to be happy with what we've got. And as you heard Gary Thompson, clerk of the course, saying, by hook or by crook, we have to get it in. There is a demand, a worldwide demand, for the TT races to happen. And as we host it, it's got to happen. So presumably it will trump everything else. So the days will go to the wayside if the TT races are to happen. Any thoughts? Then we'd like to hear what you have to say. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. I've got lots of messages that we didn't quite get to. I'm against the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit, but I don't care what the TT visitors think. The island's not a theme park for them to race around. Suggested yesterday a 20-mile-per-hour speed limit would look a bit comical at the side of where the capital of road racing. And it's 20 miles an hour. Why doesn't the media interview every politician to find out their views on this idiotic 20... Well, we know your view then, 557. Idiotic 20-mile-per-hour speed limit. And it's going to be a blanket island-wide town speed limit. Ramsey, Port Erin, Peel, Castletown. Or is it going to be just Douglas? Why doesn't everybody driving on Tynwald Day drive at 20 miles per hour on the island as a protest? Thanks also. My car, pet and home insurance has nearly doubled this year, says 496. My utility bills have doubled. Eating out or buying a coffee I would class as a luxury now. School dinners and bus fares have gone up too for children. I used to be able to save for a rainy day, but I can't afford to, says Michelle. Everything shot up apart from salaries. Well, and this is the point. We were talking yesterday about the notion of poverty, because there's going to be a report on poverty and measures to combat poverty on the Isle of Man, and exactly how we actually define poverty. What exactly is poverty? And there was discussion yesterday about people used to have a lot less money years and years ago than they do now, and people used to make do. I mean, ironically, more people used to cycle to work years and years ago than they do now in this era of active travel. People used to cycle to work because they had to, because they couldn't afford a car and it saved on bus fares. So what would you class as a luxury today? I mentioned yesterday the £5 cup of coffee. I mean, some of the prices that are charged these days for things that we used to take as run-of-the-mill costs an awful lot of money. Certainly running a car costs a lot more than it used to. So your thoughts on that, on poverty, and really how you've cut back, if you have cut back, you know, what do you class as a luxury or as a necessity? Is a necessity a widescreen television, smart television, £100 a month on Sky? or do you get one of those dodgy sticks from the bloke down the pub? You don't have to tell me your name. And we all know that they exist. Regarding the 20-mile-per-hour speed limit, how do we know how many lives have been saved and accidents avoided when the scheme is introduced? Have they or will they be keeping records? Because most accidents result from reckless driving by people who ignore all the speed limits anyway, says Mrs. C in Ramsey. And that's a good point, because if there's no method or no sanction, no method of catching people who go over this 20-mile-per-hour speed limit. And remember what the police have said, as in, who's told us about this? How do you expect us to police this? So if we're relying on the good nature of people to drive at 20 miles per hour, Mrs. C's point is dead right. These are the people who break the speed limit anyway, whether or not it's a 20 or a 30. So, you wouldn't believe how many poor people there are in Monaco, says JK. Well, tell us, JK, are there poor people in Monaco? Let's get to the phones then. And, it's Julian. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Very well. I'm very taken with that ship in Alaska.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm ringing up about that very subject, actually. But it's more mixed with vehicle safety because, you know, we're talking about 20 mile an hour speed limits and how safe they are.
Yeah.
I notice in the news yet another large vehicle carrier ship is on fire. The latest one just 2 days ago, called the Morning Midas. It was transporting 3,000 vehicles, of which 800 were electric vehicles. It's been confirmed the fire started on the EV car deck. Unfortunately, the specialist CO2 fire suppression system became depleted, unable to control the situation, so it's still burning. The 22 crew managed to escape on their lifeboat. And just last month, the MV Delphine, another car carrier with EVs on, went on fire in Zeebrugge port. On top of this, you've got the Felicity Ace that went down in 22, and Allianz is still taking Volkswagen Porsche to court because they say a Porsche Taycan started it and they weren't informed to the shipping company as to the dangers. You also had the Fremantle Highway that also had a fire suppression system that wasn't able to handle it.
Yeah.
I just noticed, I don't know if anybody has mentioned this on the radio, but Tower Insurance has raised premiums by 150% on electric vehicles, citing increased claims costs and issues with salvage and shipping.
Yeah.
And it says that they've tightened criteria for shipping EVs. And I just wonder whether that's something to do. You know, we talked a while ago about some shipping companies around Europe and the world are looking in the dashboard of EV cars before they're allowed to go on the ship, and they have to be 40% or below on the battery charge.
Well, certainly, as you were saying, that insurance companies get lumbered with this, because if there's damage to an electric vehicle, they have to be taken off the Isle of Man, which obviously will cost a minimum of, you know, 500 quid getting them there and back on the boat. That's if they can be driven. So it may be more. So you would expect that to happen. But it kind of begs the question, when's somebody going to get a certificate on the Isle of Man to be able to repair EVs? Because this can't go on. If we're going to have an EV future, somebody somewhere on the Isle of Man has got to be capable of mending the things.
Well, that's right. And, you know, there are rumours that it's becoming increasing. It's in the multiple thousands to get cars, even if they've just gone over a curb and dented the, the battery case underneath. Yeah. It's costing thousands to get it off. And I seem to remember, I think it was the Havila Kritsruten Norwegian ferry company. They've banned EVs and hybrids on all their ships between, you know, I think they do the fjord routes and some of the islands off Norway. So it just makes you wonder where this is going to go.
Well, I mean, nobody knows. You see, as with everything, with net zero and with electric vehicles, this will be hindsight. At the moment, no, we've not been here before, so we don't quite know. And certainly the danger of an electric vehicle catching light is more intense, longer, and potentially worse consequences than a fossil fuel, a diesel or a petrol vehicle catching light. That's what happened in the past. Cars have always burst into flames. Cars have always burned. This is just another type of vehicle that's burning, and presumably technology will learn to deal with it.
Well, like you rightly said the other day, I mean, it'd be kind of interesting if anyone's, because lots of people on the boat at the moment, if anyone's noticed if EVs are being segregated on the Manxman or the Mananan, or if they're just in the mix and they're all put in like sardines, in which case, you know, one of the only ways to slow down the fire is to have one of those long fire rod things that they try and shove into the underside of the vehicle. If you're surrounded by cars and you can barely barely walk past them when you're on the boat, what are these the fire suppression techniques that are, I mean, if it's just an aluminium blanket thrown over it, like you said the other day, what's it going to do to the bottom of the deck when the fire stream that's coming out from the underside is hot enough to melt a wood burner?
It's going to do it a lot of harm, isn't it?
No, well, the Swedish study on it, their thermal cameras showed it was 2,700 Celsius or 3,800 Fahrenheit. So that's enough to melt steel. So if the deck's made of steel, and, you know, if you've got more than, you know, these days, is I've noticed when I've been on the boat, there's more than one EV on the boat. If you end up with a cascade, what's it going to look like?
Well, every time we speak to the steam packet about it, they give us the same, the same line, which is safety is of paramount importance to the Isle of Man Steam Packet Company, which is what you'd expect them to say. As yet, nobody's come up with a compelling counter-argument as to what we do. You can guarantee somewhere in the world, people who work on fire suppression will be working on this. You know, there will be something that will stop an EV fire. You can't just go on like this, because who knows what will happen in the future. But, you know, if terrorists learn how to trigger an EV fire, can you imagine what would happen? So I'm presuming that industrial technology will come up with some way of suppressing an EV fire, because otherwise we're heading into a cul-de-sac.
Well, you know, when you look at the videos of them going off, there's just, you don't really see anything, and they don't even have to be on charge, but you just see a bit of a puff of smoke, and then they're literally fully ablaze, full torch, within a minute or two. So, you know, I'm mindful of the Isle of Man's history with Summerland, and, you know, there were 80-odd, but if you had an EV that went full thermal runaway on the boat with, and this, I mean, the boat at the moment, they must be having, I mean, it's over 900 now on the Manxman, plus crew, you're looking at 1,000 people, and those chutes, I don't know how quick they can get you off, but if that car, if you do have just one EV go on that boat, what is going to happen?
Well, let's hope nothing happens. We don't want to tempt fate, but it's certainly somewhere, I'm presuming somewhere, the clever people in charge of this are studying it and going to come up with something. Because, as I've mentioned before, remember, the people in charge of everything in the world are the insurance underwriters. Because if the insurance underwriters decide this is not worth it, then nobody will do anything, because it will then be down to governments to offer insurance. If commercial insurers won't handle this, and as you say, it will only take a significant event for this to happen, and we hope it doesn't happen, but at the moment, as I mentioned, there's no compelling counter-argument. Nobody in that industry can say, X, Y, and Z, this will be fine. Because at the moment, and as you say, with this fire on board this ship off Alaska, a ship going from China to Mexico with, 3,000 vehicles, 22 sailors had to be rescued. Luckily, no loss of life. But it could have been worse. And they can't keep on saying it could have been worse. Because, you know, this generally doesn't happen with normal vehicles that are being transported.
Yeah, and, you know, the tangible thing is Allianz are suing Volkswagen, and our own insurance on the Isle of Man have banged up the cost on an EV insurance cover by 150%. Yeah. So something's going on.
Well, I'll just go back to what I said before, Julian. Insurance companies will decide what's going to happen.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Andy.
Good
Cheers.
To hear from you. Thanks for that. Still trying to find out about the poor people of Monaco. It will be nice to know if there are poor people in Monaco. I don't know whether there are poor people in Monaco, but that was an interesting point of view. And the 20 mile per hour speed limit is exciting lots of comment. What's going to happen? It's not only Dr. Hayward who's failing us, the people, but most of us don't consent to the nonsense money pit ideas which take us back in time and not forward. I see, says CC, the Lady Isabella still isn't turning. The invisible people coming up with these plans, says Tony, regarding the 20-mile-per-hour limit, should have the gumption to put their name on it. Only in our government can you hide and still pick up your ridiculous salary. It would be nice to know, wouldn't it, if there are politicians who say this is a jolly good idea and I'll put my name to it. At the moment, we have the politician who by default has to present it, which is the Minister at the Department of Infrastructure, Michelle Hayward. She's having to say that. Helen said poverty is going without the essentials, such as the deprivation seen around the world where there is no help or hope. Those who survive the conditions can tell us what poverty is. There is a level of poverty on the island, but also the help given through government, charitable organisations and public generosity mitigates that. That's a very good point, Helen. Thanks for making it. Instead of the 20-mile-per-hour speed limit, why don't they just put speed ramps in place like they do in Europe, says RC on 828. Civil servants are making policy. Perhaps chief officers should be voted for, says Gaz. Well, it doesn't work that way, does it? But we take the point. There is a structure to government, obviously. Elected officials are the people who vote on the laws. They're the lawmakers. And the civil servants, the bureaucrats who back it up, are the people who, if you like, enact it. They're the people who make sure that it works. I live in Birch Hill. There's a permanent 20-mile-per-hour limit which goes deliberately ignored by most vehicle drivers. On the rare occasions when the speed signs are connected, I've seen most vehicles just below 30 miles per hour, sometimes even 40 being exceeded, says 778. The main offenders are pizza delivery drivers, buses, and even police cars, having no regard for me, with my dog, and other pedestrians who aren't able to move quickly and possibly have to run. The main ingredient is, if this limit is introduced in other areas, is policing is a must. Surely we should not have to wait for a pedestrian to be injured or even killed by a speeder before proper considerations are installed. What about CCTV? Expensive, but it's very effective. Howard just phoned in and he is right, says 778. Going back to the 20 mile per hour limit, there is a way, of course, and that is to put speed cameras up, radar controlled speed cameras, and just connect them to a camera which will take a photo of the offending vehicle. It is a way to make money. Who wants a troop invasion of CCTV signs strewn around them? We the people say no. We must say no, says Manx Will. There will be a lot more street furniture with these 20-mile-per-hour speed limits. It's all about control and it's nothing to do with common sense, says Daphne. What about these e-bikes that have chipped? Some of us can do nearly 50 miles per hour. Will they stick to 20 miles per hour, says Stewie. I don't think they will. Well, there is a call, remember, for cycles, push bikes, if you like, and e-bikes to have numbers on them, to be registered, for those numbers to be visible, and perhaps for them to have insurance. Roger says, Andy, can you ask the Man in Line audience about the development on the former Lancashire Hotel site in Sant, and I pass it twice a day. Nothing ever seems to be happening with it. It's been completed for several years now. No doubt there's plenty of skeet or rumours, just that I don't know anybody. Somebody must know some, says Roger. What's happening to the old Lancashire Hotel? Ah, the Lancashire. Derek Sewell, the clerk of Peel Commissioners, talking about Peel Day. What happened and what is going to happen?
This isn't the first time that we've had racing on Peel TT Day. Even when it was held on a Sunday, as I say, it was a contingency day. And usually every other year, particularly since 2015, there has been racing even when it was held on a Sunday, which automatically meant if the TT course is closed for vehicular traffic, it makes it very difficult for people to get to Peel. And on that basis, we saw a significant decrease in the number of visitors who attend this event, because ultimately it has been an event that Peel has put on to attract visitors to Peel specifically, so they will spend money in our hospitality industry and our retail industry. Well, Peel do two events. They obviously do the Peel Day event on one of the contingency days, do the Muddy Doo Day as well on the Thursday, on the rest day as well. So they are quite important, because during the TT period, it is a very, very attractive event for people to visit the island. It attracts a large number of people, and Peel are keen that those visitors come and spend some time in Peel.
There were a number of complaints on social media about Peel Day and how it was very quiet and there weren't many people around the town. Have you had many complaints like that before, and are the commissioners going to address any of those when they go and review it next?
Not specifically. I think it's been on social media, which the board members will pick up on. But ultimately, we haven't had anything particularly directed into us, so we haven't had any information that's come in directly to ourselves, but that may come in over the next few days, because obviously the Peel TT Day was only a day or so ago. So we haven't had actually anything in writing yet or anything directly. So I'm sure it'll be a discussion point. It was a discussion point when it was changed from the Sunday to the Monday when the race schedule changed. On that basis, I'm sure it will be discussed again when they review this event.
Now, do you have any opinion on this? As Derek Sewell says, it's happened before. When it used to be on the Sunday, it happened. On the other hand, a lot of preparation went into Peel Day. Many people, lots of traders, got in extra stock, extra staff perhaps, to cope with it. And let's just be kind and say it wasn't a resounding success. But what do you do? How do you cope with that? If we had a Department of Enterprise look at the park roadside, that was perfect for the parking of camper vans. Properly serviced would have been a real opportunity, says Mo. Crikey, the old park road school, you would have gotten 15, 20, possibly 30 on there. You could have charged for that. If you live around that area, what would you have thought of that? Derby Road by the Bowling Green? Thank you, Dee. I found your WhatsApp from yesterday. The university discussion, we were talking about possibly charging or lessening the mitigation for tuition fees. Now, our own experience, our daughter's just completed a medicine degree. That's 5 years. She's now got a debt of £12,500 due to the government paying only part of her fees. We've contributed over £60,000 over 5 years for accommodation, food, living allowance and travel, which in the UK they would have received maintenance for and had added to their loan, but not on the Isle of Man. UK students are far better off, in our opinion, as their wages determine repayment. Some courses can't be done at our island. University will soon be for the rich or the poor, not those in between. As on the Isle of Man, it's the parents who are paying. Obviously, less well off will get the maintenance grant if the parents earn around the minimum wage. So thank you, Donna, for that. Good to hear from you. Thanks for your point on Man in Line today. How many pedestrians have been killed in the last 5 years? Off the top of my head, I don't know. 378, 376. But it would be worth finding out. whether or not, and lots of people are asking, is this 20 mile per hour speed limit, what's the motivation for it? Is it road safety? Is it traffic calming? Remember, in this new development that's happening on Domain Road, at the back of what used to be the old nurse's home, that's going to be, I don't think you're going to be allowed to have a car on there. So that will be the 20-minute city strolling up and down. I want to say, says Alan, I started my career at the age of 15, which was the school leaving age then. As a young apprentice, I worked my way up the company to be a company director. My memory is also called to the late Sid Shimmin, who started as a cabin boy on the Steam Packet Company. He became the company's managing director. In my opinion, says Alan, it's important to give people the opportunity of becoming an apprentice.
Hello, this is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Give your home a facelift with Manx Glass and Glazing. Whether choosing aluminium or UPVC in traditional or contemporary styles, you can be sure of excellent workmanship and guarantees. Members of Construction Isle of Man and family run for over 30 years, Manx Glass and Glazing are committed to the local community, and they invest in future generations through their apprenticeship scheme. Visit the impressive showroom on Snugborough Trading Estate. Trust Manx Glass and Glazing, quality and style since 1986.
Looking to make the most of your savings? Cornerstone Bank offer a range of savings options, from fixed terms of 6 months to 3 years, to variable rate notice accounts with notice periods of 95 to 180 days. And choose monthly or annual interest, whatever works for you. For the latest rates and an application form, check out cornerstonebank.co.im. Cornerstone Bank, celebrating 90 years of community, heritage and connection. Here for the journey. All deposits are subject to status, terms and conditions apply. No early withdrawals permitted. Qualifying deposits made with Cornerstone Bank are covered by the Isle of Man Depositors Compensation Scheme as set out in the Depositors Compensation Scheme Regulations 2010.
Heating oil for homes, powering farms and businesses, keeping you moving with petrol stations across the island. Ellen Vannin Fuels. Call us on 84 4000.
The RAF Red Arrows display team mark their TT return for 2025 on Thursday the 5th of June from 7:30pm in Douglas. Watch the display from Douglas Prom, Douglas or Onchan Head, and hear the commentary live from Red 10, Squadron Leader Graham Muscat, only on Manx Radio, FM, AM and DAB from 7:25. Manx Radio's live commentary with the Red Arrows from Villa Marina Balcony in Douglas, right here this evening from 7:25.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Mastermind, 26 minutes before one. A message in from somebody at Tower Bends, a marshal apparently, yesterday. They found a valid Irish tax disc, which looked like it was from a Honda 650. If you know somebody on an Irish Honda 650 who's lost their tax disc, I think the police have got it. I'm wondering whether people approve of this electric tag idea. Surely an innocent human would we feel comfortable or safe wearing a device if bailed for an offence which you haven't done? I thought innocent until proven guilty meant just that. I don't understand why this new law is being brought out of the bag. The island's courts could soon be able to use electronic tags to track people who are on bail. Timber will be asked to approve new legal powers later this month, which will prepare the way for those awaiting trial and sentencing to be monitored electronically. The tags will be worn around the ankle, which means a person's location will be known 24 hours a day, allowing authorities to ensure that an individual is complying with their bail conditions, such as an overnight curfew. It's hoped the move will mean more people can remain in the community, reserving custody for the most serious of offences, as well as helping to manage prison occupancy. The tagging pilot previously took place 3 years ago now was expanded to include those being released on licence or parole. Those recommended for electronic monitoring will be subject to a rigorous risk assessment first. If approved, the legal instruments will lay the groundwork to allow tagging to begin this year. Department of Home Affairs says it's developing options to use electronic monitoring as part of a community-based sentence for both juvenile and adult offenders. Department confirmed the costs associated with tagging would come from its existing budget, no extra finance needed. The legal framework will be discussed in Tynwald later on this month. What do you think of electronic tags? Do you think that's... particularly if it hasn't come to trial yet, I just wonder what your thoughts are regarding that. They would presumably be invisible. I don't think they're big clumpy things, are they? Good point. How do we define poverty, said Charles. Some people are quite content with not very much, while others are constantly envious of other people. There's an old Scottish saying, greatest wealth is contentment with little. Thank you, Charles. Yes, that might have a lot to do with it, Charles, the old green-eyed monster, wanting what somebody else has got, comparing yourself to other people. That's one of the original sins, isn't it? So how do we define poverty? Have you noticed Ramsey Commissioner's reported that campervan waste is being tipped onto the beach, says Gaz. I hadn't noticed that, but thanks for pointing it out. Surely, says Sue, there are designated areas for motorhomes. They're called campsites. That's where most people stay when they go across in a campervan. Sadly, the site you referred to down south has closed. I'm wondering, do people approve of this electronic tag idea? Another one in from Charlie. George Orwell was spot on, says 775. Which part of George Orwell was spot on? 1984, presumably. Peel shops relying on their festival day makes me wonder how much business they've had from all the motorhomes on Peel Promenade. I may have said this before. Well, say it again, Robert. Here we go again. The new race schedule doesn't benefit the Isle of Man as a whole. The racing puts a great imposition on the residents almost every day, whether they are fans or not. Visitors aren't getting time to travel around and experience the Isle of Man. The Ramsey Sprint has gone. Attendances at Peel and Port Erin badly affected. Will they disappear next? Mad Sunday for me was staying away from the course and visiting Owners Club meetings around the Isle of Man, the museums and the attractions, and eating out. Another effect the schedule has when the Manx weather kicks in is shortened races crammed in towards the end of the week. Short-changing competitors and fans alike, race teams, officials and marshals are getting little time to themselves. Back to the old schedule, make it a celebration of the Isle of Man and not just the TT, says Bob the Marshal. And let's... I think we've got... it's Tony with us now. Hi, Tony.
How are you doing, Andy?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, good.
What I was calling for was... You said something a bit before about these 20-mile-an-hour limits. That, you know, well, you basically said that the government makes the rules,
yeah,
and then our political aficionados, who should be working for the government, carry out the necessary work to put it in place. Now, my question is, when did they decide that we should have a 20-mile-an-hour blanket speed limit anywhere? Because I don't remember that being mentioned by any of the super rich MHKs we've got.
No, I mean, we'll go back to it. The original suggestion was, and this has been a couple of years ago, was Ann Corlett in Douglas Central. She wanted a 20 is plenty around Balcomine High School, around the estates there.
Well, how then did that turn into a blanket 20-mile-an-hour limit?
And that's the important thing, is at what point did that transmogrify into a 20-mile-per-hour here, there and everywhere? Somebody somewhere has come up with that, and they haven't stood up and put their hand up.
And that's typical, but the issue is, why does the minister just nod it through? Why don't they do something about the departments they're in charge of? You know, if you've got a department that's lost its way or basically won't do what the policy is, they're just doing what they want, then I don't think we've got control of our departments, do we? And I think that's the whole problem with all the government. The government has no control at all. It's at the behest of somebody in a department somewhere who has a completely different idea.
Yeah. It may be... Tony, it may be that the people who... You know, and at the moment, you know, we hear negative vibes about this 20 mile per hour speed limit. Now, it may be that the only people who are negative about it are people who listen to Man in Line who go on social media. And that may be the view of politicians or the bureaucrats and civil service. They may just think, well, this is just a social media flim-flam. It's just a storm in a teacup. And really, most people will go along with it.
Well, I live in Ramsey. And Ramsey Town Commissioners, as far as I know, not the DOI, decided they would make the town 20 mile an hour down the main street. And I agree with that 100%. That's fine. It's not just down the main street, it's on the side of the arbour as well. But those are only two roads that are 20. And I'm very careful to do 20 because I think that's a sensible thing to do. Lots of people around, parked cars, people can walk out, etc., etc. But if you were to apply that across the board in Ramsey, I think you'd get riots. People don't want 20 mile an hour limits across the board. But what we're getting to is somebody has an idea, like the MHK that said 20 is plenty. 20 is plenty around a school. I don't disagree. But not across the whole of Douglas. So what you've got is somebody in a department has made a decision and never communicated it, and they've gone and spent a fortune of our money, not their money, our money, on signs. And you wonder, what on earth are they doing? And the person in charge, and it changes, like I change my underwear, every 5 minutes somebody else is in charge because nobody wants it. Instead of doing something about it and saying, this is wrong, we're not going to proceed with this, they just nod their head and say, OK, let's go with it. It's in place anyway. We've spent the money. I can't do anything about it, despite being in charge of it.
Mm.
So what you can see is that it's not just one thing. There's dozens of things in the government like this.
So what do we do, Tony?
I think all of the MHKs who are in charge of departments should take control of their departments. That's the first thing. I mean, if you remember, I think a year and a half ago or so, Alf Cannon decided that DOI was out of control and he was going to fix it. So 4 weeks later, he put somebody else in charge of it. But he didn't fix anything. So the problem is that they know within government that DOI and a lot of other departments are completely out of control. Who decided we should stop sending the bus down to the south? To the sound? Why? Whose idea was that? And it's quoted as, oh, well, it's costing too much. And then you get the next, you get Hayward in, and she says, oh, we don't know how much it costs. So effectively, we're being lied to all the time and told not to take any notice of the people like me who complain about it. The whole system stinks. And it stinks because they're not doing their job. The job of an MHK is to hold the department to account. It's not to nod his head or her head every time somebody in the department says, oh, I've got a brilliant idea. We'll hang a skyhook and give everybody a day off or something. It's just ludicrous. And the ideas they come out with, they're not even sensible. I mean, who approved the landing stage? Who approved all the other things? The boat, it goes on and on and on. And nobody says, oh, well, that was his idea. And there's no penalty for it. So why wouldn't they keep doing it? They will. I don't know. All I can say is there's an election coming, and I hope to God that everybody doesn't forget what they're doing now, and they are ready to do something about it when they vote.
Okay.
And everybody needs to get out and vote.
All right. Okay,
and get rid of this poor administration, I would say.
All right. Thanks for calling.
In fact, what we should do is force people to vote. Everybody should vote.
Okay.
You take care, Andy.
Thanks for calling today. It's good to hear from you. text, email, call and WhatsApp then. It's a point worth making then about the DOI. Remember, they're the people who cut the bus service to the calf of man. They're the ones who said it cost too much money. It lost money and then couldn't quite tell us, despite the fact that lots of bus services lose money. That one. The Liverpool landing stage was Department of Infrastructure as well, and it will be embarrassing just to tell you how much that's gone over budget. So, and it was true that the Chief Minister did say that they were going to sort out the Department of Infrastructure. I don't think there is these exact words, but that it was going to be perhaps broken up because it had lots and lots of responsibility. Some areas of responsibility didn't quite tally with others. Surely there are designated areas for motorhomes. They're called campsites. Another message in from Sue as well. You say do 20 miles per hour. Who's there policing it? I've not seen a police officer for months in the south of the island, says JK. Probably because you're very law-abiding, JK. It's bonkers for the Isle of Man government to finance young people to go to university and not to return to work here while banging on about a shortage of workers, says Gaz. Well, you can't force people to come back to the Isle of Man, and it's fair to say lots of young people do go away, work across, and then come back to the Isle of Man. And it's certainly a debate and a discussion worth having about how this public money is spent. But remember, even if the government does put public money towards tuition fees, remember, the families and the students themselves have to find accommodation fees. They have to find all that money and the travel fees and the food. It's a joke when the TT organisers say they try to minimise the disruption caused by the road closures, but have two more race days added. The disruption now, I think, is unacceptable. It prevents people from getting about to use the shops and the cafes that they're talking about. It's been said for many years, but each generation seems further away from their older peers, says Ian on 817. A major factor now is IT. Young people live through their IT devices, which feels a million miles away from my outlook on life. On a separate matter, I also agree there seems to be too many road closures these days for the TT. Definitely feels different to the old days, and in my opinion, isn't an ideal situation for the public. I recently received my car tax through the post, says Pam. I paid online as the preferred option given to me in plenty of time. I have this morning had to call the vehicle licensing office to ask where my tax disc is. I paid the 28th of May, Wednesday 28th of May. The lady assured me my tax disc was posted the following day, Thursday 29th. I still haven't got my tax disc. I live in Douglas. I don't live in Andrus. We've had no bank holidays. So what on earth's going on with the post office? The service, I think, is disgraceful. I could have walked to the vehicle licensing office there and back in the time it's taken for the Isle of Man post to deliver it. Maybe Stu Peters could shed some light. Says Pam, how's your postal service doing at the moment?
Above deck or below, Harbour Marine Services has all your boating needs in one place. From engine sales and servicing to charts, books, dinghies and trailers, electronics, navigation, ropes, rigging and safety. Over 2,000 square feet of stock to help you stay safe on the water. Call 822995 or find us on Facebook. For all your chandlery supplies, set your course to Harbour Marine Services, next to Castle Down Harbour.
Do you want to have your voice heard? The Isle of Man government wants to connect with you. Join the Chief Minister and the Council of Ministers at a roadshow event near you. Monday the 30th of June at Ramsey Grammar School. Tuesday 1st of July at Ballacameen High School, Douglas. Wednesday the 2nd at Castle Russian High School. And Thursday the 3rd at Queen Elizabeth II High School, Peel. All events are from 5:30 until 8 and doors open at 5:15. You'll have the chance to meet ministers one-on-one, share your thoughts on national matters and take part in a Q&A session. We're listening to you. Register your free attendance at islandplan.im/roadshows.
People of the Isle of Man, are you thinking of buying or selling a home? Well, wait! You need to talk to the conveyancing team at LVW Law. LVW Law! They've over 20 years of experience and know what they're talking about. They're friendly and efficient. Do not buy or sell a property without calling LVW Law on 836757 for a no-obligation quote. LVW Law.
Douglas North MHK John Wallenberg is approaching the end of his fourth year as a national politician. He's chair of the Manx Utilities Authority, which, unlike its private sector counterparts in the UK, is pretty good at supplying us with water, and with the exception of Peel and Laxey, has a generally good record on disposing of the sewage we produce without polluting the environment. John talks to Perspective about his role at the MUA, as well as reflecting on the state of Manx politics. That's Perspective this Sunday at 12 on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gore. With new sewage treatment works at Peel and Garth in the pipeline, is the MUA flushed with success?
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Thanks for dropping by this Thursday lunchtime. Of course, it's a bank holiday tomorrow. It is a race day, and I got a message in from Becky who said, what's happening tomorrow with the races? Well, you can tune into 1368. They'll tell you. Or I'll tell you anyway, Becky, so you can stay here. As a result of the race schedule, the result is going, let's see, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, Mountain Road closes, 10 o'clock all roads close, 10:45 Superstock TT Race 2 over 3 laps, 1 o'clock Sidecar TT Race 2, 2 laps, 3 o'clock Senior Practice, 1 lap, 4:15 Super Twin TT Race, 3 laps. All roads will reopen no later than 9:30 tomorrow. So that's that situation. Hi to Tim in Elmer in Sussex. All the best to you, Tim, listening to Manx Radio. And there's a message in. Thank you, Simon. He said, you were talking about cycling on Strand Street in Douglas. Guess what? Yesterday, I went to Strand Street in Douglas and got nearly knocked over. It was an adult male riding a bicycle down, and he came from behind me, almost knocked me over. As I was about to say something, two young males came down Strand Street the other way doing wheelies. Oh, how we laughed. Something surely has got to be done about this. And all joking aside, something has to be done seriously about this. Is it true you can cycle down Strand Street or can't you? Is it against the law or is it permitted? Make your mind up. Thank you, Simon. And good to hear from you. Regarding the roads and Irish travel. Now, the roads, this is Lucy, who said, instead of the 20 mile per hour, which they've already brought in the signs for, Mona Drive is a death trap at the moment, both pavement and road. I've been in touch with the DOI, but they're not going anywhere near it anytime soon. If only they'd focus on what's needed before more cars and people are damaged. Many people, including my 90-year-old grandmother, have tripped or fallen on the uneven pavement. Irish travel. Now, we've had people from Ireland coming for over 20 years, and they've seen no advertising for travel on the Isle of Man, to the Isle of Man. Government and Steam Packet need to do more to help the tourism for the Isle of Man. We've been told 2024 was the best year for hospitality in recent years. Somebody tell our occupancy report that. We could have had so much more in terms of tourism, but it feels like they're trying to kill it off, says Lucy. Thank you. That's Lucy from the Welbeck Hotel, Lucy George. Thank you, Lucy. Dave said, I don't know about those houses at the Lancashire site. Are they shells? Are they structurally unstable? Did they have planning permission? What I do know is, says Dave, there have been children, kids, using the site for underage drinking. And by the way, it was nice to see a Bobby in Strand Street yesterday. Long may it continue, says Liz D. Or is it just for the TT? The vast majority, Big John says, the vast majority of cyclists are well versed with the highway code. It could be argued that the cyclist that was arrested for cycling against the flow and not allowed on the TT Mountain Road, he ignored signage and members of the public telling him to stop. Yet again, a cyclist totally ignoring signage. The government should act now and introduce mandatory training and a plate of some description indicating that they've passed a highway test or have a basic knowledge. A concerned Big John. Did you see that story about the cyclist? Went through the barriers on purpose, went the wrong way over the mountain. Cost a whole lot of time and manpower to sort it all out, and presumably he'll be dealt with as regards the law. The current TT racing schedule has increased the number of events from 7 to 10, says Paul in Mackled. These need to be crammed into the same 2 weeks, thus putting an enormous strain on all people involved. From Gary Thompson, the clerk of the course, through to marshals, medics and scrutineers. I've also heard visitors complaining about the lack of opportunity to see the Isle of Man. The lack of visitors to Peel Day and Port Erin Fun Day are an example of this. Exactly. So Monday was supposed to be a rest day.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
But Gary had to run the races. Well, there is an imperative, isn't there, to run the races, and obviously Gary Thompson is in charge, and that's what he's supposed to do. I was shocked to hear that the Marks & Spencer Cafe is closing in the future. Yes, it is. Many pearls are being clutched. I think this is madness. The cafe brings more custom into the store. It also enables customers to sit down, have lunch or a drink, sometimes a tiring shopping trip. It's always busy and it's a meeting place for lots of people around the island, although the management from the UK obviously think they know better. Well, there will be a hot chicken counter. That's what we need in Douglas, more hot chicken counters, don't we? That's it. Back on Monday. Enjoy your weekend and take care.
WINT.